Once again, everybody, thank you very, very much for coming out today. Birshut, the other speakers, and the esteemed rabbis that are with us. I'd first like to thank Esther and Eliakim Katzen for sponsoring this upcoming shiur in memory of Esther's grandparents, Rav Yehoshua Zelig and Esther Oak, who were murdered by the Nazis in Ponar in October 1941. Thanks as well to David and Agnes Miller for sponsoring this shiur. Apparently in my honor, so thank you for that. Thanks as well to Serena and David Kashitsky for sponsoring the today's entire event in memory of Riva Kashitsky, Zichrona Livracha. We are still accepting any donations for our Women's Beit Midrash programming out front, if on your way in or on your way out, that is something you want to take part in. That's, of course, a very wonderful cause. There are also all sorts of flyers for upcoming programs that we will be running that you're more than welcome to take with you on your way out, but certainly thank you for coming today. So Vilna 1848, I'd like to open with the following story that you've likely maybe heard some version of over the years. If you haven't, this is sort of the way you classically hear it told. And for this, I just cut and pasted from the Aish website. You've got like a classic version, and here's how it sounds. This rabbi writes, I'd also like to share this story. About 150 years ago, there was an epidemic going around parts of Lithuania around the time of the high holidays. Doctors' orders were that nobody was allowed to fast. It seemed, however, that few were willing to follow the doctor's orders. You know, for some people, they can't bring themselves to possibly eat on Yom Kippur. That seems like the biggest avera, even though, of course, the halacha states that when one is required to fast for their, one is required to eat for their health, they're not supposed to fast. Nevertheless, it's hard to convince people of that. People tend to say to their doctors, what do you want? I'm fine, I can fast. So, there were a lot of people that weren't so interested in that. Realizing this, Rabbi Israel Salanter went from synagogue to synagogue on Yom Kippur night, and standing by the ark, just as we are right here, he ate before the shocked crowds. Seeing their rabbi eat on Yom Kippur, the masses went home to eat as well. Just as on Yom Kippur, it's a mitzvah to fast, in certain circumstances, the mitzvah is to eat on Yom Kippur. Even if a person wants to fast like everybody else, God sometimes gives a unique test, in this case, to eat on Yom Kippur, to remain healthy, and to serve God. And so, raise your hand if you've heard some version of this story before. Okay, so we've got quite a nice chunk of people. For those of you who haven't, that's the way it's commonly told. All sorts of different versions of it, but basically, the main points are as follows. Rabbi Israel Salanter eats on Yom Kippur sometime during a plague. Okay, those are the highlights of the story. Now, when you hear a story like this, you'd like to go back to some of the sources that may have analyzed it from a historical perspective. In this case, there is a very popular book on the Musar movement called Tenuat HaMusar, published by Rabbi Dov Katz, and he also brings this story, and let's go through some of the points and the ways that he tells this story as well. I've summarized his retelling of the story, and we'll talk about some of his sources in a little bit in the following note in point number 2 on your source sheets. So, his book, by the way, is based generally on impeccable research. His sources include writings from Rabbi Israel Salanter's sons, other contemporary accounts, and is usually considered very, very reliable. Now, according to him, this story took place on Yom Kippur 1848, okay, hence the title, Vilna 1848. And despite no clear conclusion from the city rabbis, Rabbi Salanter, who was one of them, decided that due to the danger of the cholera plague, which was at that point going on, there were a number of sort of big cholera plagues around that time in all parts of Europe, Lithuania, etc. And for that year, the rabbis were split. What should we do? Should we tell people to fast? Should we tell people to eat? On the one hand, people that are 100% healthy right now, it may be hard to justify them eating, especially since the doctors of that time weren't quite certain as to what effect fasting might have on this plague. Just because somebody fasted, did that mean they were going to get sick, or would that even increase their chances of getting sick? So there was this question as to sort of the reality of the situation. In fact, we don't even know, truthfully, what the doctor said. There are different reports. Some say the doctor said everybody must eat or else. Some people say the doctor said that that wasn't the case at all. So there's conflicting reports. But nevertheless, despite no clear conclusion from the classical Beit Din of the city, Rabbi Salanter decided that there are two factors that were going to sway him in terms of telling everybody to eat. Factor number 1, it's danger. You don't mess around with danger. right? Famously, Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik is of the opinion being, he was very, very careful when it came to life and death circumstances, specifically eating on Yom Kippur. And somebody asked him once, you're so machmir, you're so stringent in many areas of halacha, how can you be so makil when it comes to the laws of Yom Kippur? How can you be so lenient? And he said, I'm not makil on Yom Kippur. I'm being machmir on pikuach nefesh. I'm being machmir on people's lives. So I am being machmir in this case. So number one, he said, it's a case of danger. So Rabbi Salanter decided that people should eat. But number two, he realized there was a possibility of chilul Hashem, of profaning God's name, if people would see that the Jews were fasting when there was such a plague going on. If they were to get sick afterwards, all the non-Jews would say, look at these Jews spreading the plague, it's all their fault, they're fasting on their holy days, what a terrible thing. And therefore, based on these two factors, Rabbi Katz reports that Rabbi Salanter decided that this was not a good idea, no eating this Yom Kippur. So, the day before Yom Kippur, he himself went around the city, from synagogue to synagogue, and hung up signs, which read, among other parts of them, not to fast on this holy and awesome day, to shorten the prayers, and to walk outside in the fresh air, which doctors believe would help people avoid cholera. Now, again, clearly, we don't know exactly what the doctor said, but he himself was very, very worried that people wouldn't listen to what he had to say. After all, he wasn't the only rabbi in Vilna, as we will see. And he certainly wasn't even the most influential in terms of psak halacha. So therefore, he decided in order to strengthen what he felt was the correct decision, which is that everybody should be eating this Yom Kippur, he personally arose in the synagogue that he was in after the Shacharit prayer, so a nice chunk into the day, not at night like we had in the previous retelling. And he gets up there and he says, hi, everybody. And he goes to the side room. He grabs a bottle of wine. He grabs some little mizonos. And he gets up there and he makes Kiddush, okay, on Yom Kippur, which is a question altogether as to whether or not there is Kiddush on Yom Kippur. But nevertheless, that's what he does, and he drinks some wine, he eats some of these cakes, and people were really shocked, you could imagine. I mean, I want you to think for a moment, even if there was a debate about this, if the rabbi of the shul would get up there and make Kiddush on Yom Kippur after Shacharis in front of everybody, people were astonished, they didn't know what was going on. So they didn't really want to follow his example. They still were very hesitant, despite him going ahead and eating. So what he did, some people say at this point that Rabbi Bezalel, a Kohen who was the head of the community, one of the top judges, actually got up after Rabbi Salanter and said, no eating unless you have specific doctor's permission to eat. If your doctor told you you've got to eat today, then I want you to eat, says Rabbi Bezalel. But otherwise, he says, you have no permission to eat, which is what Rabbi Salanter had advocated, just telling everybody they should be eating. And therefore, at that point, Rabbi Salanter apparently persisted and said, no, everybody's got to eat, and he waited till you came up to the bima, and you came up to the bima, and took some of his little desserts that he had out there and ate some food on Yom Kippur. What a story. Now, unlike the rest of this book, however, this particular incident is not particularly well-sourced. It's not supported very well at all. He does cite some material from Rabbi Salanter's sons, but not this story. He tries to say that, well, we know that Rabbi Salanter in general was careful around the time of the cholera plague and permitted some people to eat what we call less than a shir, pachot mikashir, a small amount of food that doesn't constitute halachic eating on Yom Kippur, or at the very, it's not something that you can eat just as a regular healthy person, it's only in cases of illness, but it's preferred to actually eating a lot. And he tries to cite support from these sources, but really none of them actually tell this story. He does have a few sources that tell the story. We will look at some of them in the coming minutes. Specifically, I wanted to first look at one of the most popular renditions, really, of this story. That is by the author David Frischman, who was a Yiddish and Hebrew writer, and he tells the story in Hebrew as a story called Shlosha She'achlu. It's a play on words. The Mishnah in Avot talks about three people who eat together, and then some ramifications of that. In Brachot also, we know that the Mishnah and Gemara talk about that as well. So it's intended as a play on words, and he actually opens with those words. He's clearly very knowledgeable in Jewish sources. And he tells the story of the three who ate. Okay? And you can, I'll give you again a sort of background of the story from his perspective. But basically, the three who ate our rabbi, the rabbi of the community, who goes unnamed in his version of the story, as well as two judges who flank him on his right and his left. They all get up also during the day on Yom Kippur afternoon. It seems a little bit later in the afternoon. And the rabbi basically speaks and says, I'm going to permit you all, and we'll see the citation from this story now, and I'll fill in a few details as well. We'll read the English translation. It's a translation taken from one of the articles that I read on this topic. It is Atonement Day in the afternoon. The rabbi stands on the platform in the center of the synagogue, tall and venerable. The people are waiting to hear what the rabbi will say, and one is afraid to draw one's breath. And the rabbi begins to speak. His weak voice goes stronger and higher every minute, and at last it is quite loud. He speaks of the sanctity of the holiday and of the intention of the giver of the Torah, of repentance, of prayer, of the living and the dead, and of the pestilence that has broken out. Again, knowing that there's a massive cholera plague, which is documented in many, many sources, specifically in 1848, okay? And we'll talk about when this may be taking place in just a moment. For how long, at this point he's already speaking, for how much longer? And David Frischman writes, and I hear him say, and when trouble comes to a man, he must look to his deeds, and not only to those which concern him and the Almighty, but to those which concern himself, to his body, to his flesh, to his own health. There are times when must turn aside from the law, if by so doing a whole community may be saved. And then he says something which will sound better in Hebrew. I'll read it in Hebrew, but then again in English. Al da'at hamakom v'al da'at hakahal anu matirim le'echol v'lishtot hayom, or in some versions, le'echol b'yom hakipurim. Okay, for those of you who are familiar with the Kol Nidre prayer, we say a similar prayer, al da'at hamakom v'al da'at hakahal anu matirim lehitpalel ma'avar yanim. And this is like a play on those words, where he gets up and he says, Anu matirim le'echol b'yom hakipurim, we allow you all to eat on Yom Kippur. At this point, both him and the two judges that are flanking him, which is also reminiscent of that nighttime prayer, where traditionally the two judges of the community would come up and hold Sifrei Torah alongside the rabbi of the community. That's also what happens in this story, and at this point, all three of them eat, and they convince the entire community that this is a great idea. It's of utmost importance for the sanctity of life, and everybody follows suit. The story ends, by the way, in true Vilna 1848 fashion, and as we'll see, it wasn't actually in Vilna 1848, but in true fashion when he says, and across the street from the shul, there were another three that ate. These were three maskilim who didn't believe in any of this stuff, and they were playing cards and drinking tea. He says, I don't think they were as strong as the people who were eating across the street, but anyways, that's the conclusion of the story. Now, based on some of the details that we've seen, as well as realizing, if you read this story, which is written in Hebrew, it's a beautiful, beautiful story. Number one, it does not name the rabbi. Number two, more importantly, we see him talking in the first person. I saw this, I saw that, I was there, I could never forget this. Now, if you look at the title of that I had, I put in his biographical information. Do we know when he was born? Yes, he was born a long time after this is supposed to have happened. Now, also knowing that he is a story writer, right, and he's very involved in writing short stories, one would have good reason to suspect that perhaps this should not be taken as the most historically accurate account. For example, again, we don't really know, even if this may have happened later, and there are versions that actually date it later on in history, as we will see, there are so many details of the story that are clearly embellished and are meant to bring up certain ideas. I mean, again, it's written beautifully. It's a great story. You really, really want to read it. But it's hard to imagine that each of those details are actually accurate. One interesting detail that is accurate, however, which he completely could have looked up in a calendar, is that it happened to be that Yom Kippur was also a Shabbat, which he mentions at the beginning. But all these other details combined make us skeptical that this is actually a historical retelling. More importantly, in terms of realizing that it wasn't historical, for example, he in this the rest of the story identifies the rabbi. He says, Ben Shmonim Shana Anochi Hayom, I'm 80 years old today, as part of his speech. Rabbi Israel Salanter died before he reached 80. So again, we're clearly not dealing with a historical retelling of this event, if it was even intended to be so in first place. Again, despite that, he repeatedly talks about how I could never forget this my whole life, and I, envision myself being there right now. And again, we talked about the three of them eating. We talked about the judges. We talked about the Al-Da'at HaMakom prayer. So there are very many things that make us skeptical of this story as a historical reality, based on the way that it's written in this account. Now, from this source alone, we might have had grounds to reject it, simply based on the date, right? If he was only born in 1859, we're probably not dealing with an event that occurred 11 years before he was born. However, if we look at another source, something which is slightly more historical, there is actually a different date given. And that is from Rabbi Baruch HaLevi Epstein's Mekor Baruch, a very, very well-known work, really, of history to a great extent. It was parts of it were translated into English as the famed My Uncle the Netziv, which was a book that appeared many years ago, had a little bit of controversy surrounding it. But Rabbi Epstein, who is himself the author of the Torah Tamima, the son of the Aruch HaShulchan, is, you know, generally looked upon as a very reliable figure. And he tells the story as follows. And again, I have a summary of the points from his retelling of the story. I will note, though, that although the general story which he was telling, as you can see in the first bullet point in source number 4, was that he heard this from a relative who heard it from Isaac Meir Dick, a noted Yiddish author who lived in Vilna during the mid-1800s and was close with the Epstein family, he doesn't say that this story was actually heard from him. He simply inserts this story into another narrative that's taking place. So we don't know exactly what his source was. Even if his source was this Isaac Meir Dick, it's unclear exactly how many, you know, versions away it may have been removed. But he says that this story took place on Yom Kippur, 1869. Okay, so that's a much later date already. In terms of reconciling that with the other historical elements, there doesn't appear to have been a particularly strong cholera plague sweeping through Vilna in 1869. We'll see some of the dates in a little bit of a later source. However, there certainly was something going on there. Not everybody was healthy, so it's a possibility that this happened. Rabbi Epstein was alive at the time, but he does not claim to have been there. And apparently in his version, all of the doctors, the Jewish doctors, the non-Jewish doctors, anything in between? Do we have something in between? No. All decided that there is no way anybody who fasts is going to get sick. This is a terrible idea. So the people of the city, again, were undecided what to do. After Shacharit, again in this story, Rabbi Salantran, two community members, two judges, stand at the bima. And they again say, Anu matirim l'yachol b'yom ha-kippurim, similar prayer sound. And again, they require the community to eat on Yom Kippur. They then make kiddush and eat baked goods, just like in the previous version. And apparently, this is the craziest part of this retelling. He says that this Isaac Meir Dick actually understood that the purpose of this story was not because people were not supposed to be fasting. It's true. They weren't supposed to be fasting. But doctors were more concerned about people's moods. And doctors felt that if people were sad, upset, or emotionally sort of not at their peak, that could actually lead to more of an illness than fasting could. And there, certainly this was the medical opinion a few years later, and therefore this Isaac Meir Dick, who is featured in this story prominently, himself understood that this was Rabbi Salanter's version of a joke, and that people were going to laugh about it and find this very funny. And as a result, the way Rabbi Epstein tells it, Isaac Meir Dick himself, in later years, would get up on Yom Kippur and crack jokes in front of everybody to keep their spirits up while they were fasting. Why? Because the cholera had returned. The plague had returned, and he felt in order to keep people safe, this is what we have to do. A fascinating take on the story. However, let's take a look at some of the details of the story again. First of all, Tenuat HaMusar acknowledges this source, the book that we saw earlier, which tells it in its classic form. And it's very, very tough to imagine that he has any specific special insight, or even from people who were there. First of all, his date doesn't match the other dates that we have. And Tenuat HaMusar says, in fact, yeah, you know, somewhere a mistake crept in. How did this creep, you know, about 20 years later in history? How did that happen? It's unclear. And he seems to be telling it as a folktale. Also, there are very many parallels with the retelling that we just read in David Frischman's book and his retelling of it, which, of course, it doesn't seem that he was alive. If he would have been alive, he would have been about 9 years old, 10 years old at the time, which is a possibility that he could remember such an event. But the other conflicting details are enough for us to say that there was clearly some embellishment involved on his part. And some of those embellishments are present in Rabbi Epstein's account as well. Again, the rabbi and the two judges and the Alda'at HaMakom prayer and some of the other details, the making Kiddush in front of everybody, are also present there. So it's hard to say exactly what's going on. One way that we could look at the story would be to question as to whether or not such a halachic decision would be warranted. If we are to understand and agree to what Rabbi Epstein presents, which is that all of the doctors said that everybody must eat, then that's not a hard halachic decision to defend. If, on the other hand, doctors did not say that, and rather, as some people tell the story, in order to convince some people to eat, Rabbi Salanter decided to himself eat even though he wasn't in any danger, that is quite a questionable halachic decision. And the question of public policy was discussed by very many gedolim of the time, who each experienced similar plagues in their locales. And therefore, I thought I would bring a source from Rabbi Shlomo Yosef Zevin in Hamo'adim BaHalacha, in which he discusses the idea of what should be done as public policy in these circumstances. And he tells us, Achronim danu al zman magifat dever choli ra rachman al itzlan, in source number 5, Rabbi Zevin writes that the later authorities, the Achronim, deliberated about what should happen in such a time of plague of cholera. Kesharofim omrim sha'ta'anit tazik labriim mutarim lechol, if the doctors say that even healthy people may be affected if they fast, what should public policy be? HaChatam Sofer Hitir, and in fact, no smaller a figure than the Chatam Sofer himself said that it's fine to eat. Al Avi HaMusariim Rabbi Yisrael Misalantzal, and he quotes our story. He says, they tell about Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, Shehu Be'atzmo Alal HaBima V'darash Shehakal Lo Yitaneh, that he got up in front of the bima and he clapped on the bima and he said, everybody's got to eat today. And in fact, Yesh Mosifim, he adds that there are those people that add to the story and say that he himself ate in order to convince other people to eat. However, then he quotes what is a very, very important source for the discussion. Ulam, however, Bishut Reshit Bikurim L'Rabbi Bitzalel HaKohen Zalmi Vilna. Does anybody remember that name from earlier? Rabbi Bitzalel was the one who in some versions came and went against what Rabbi Salanter had to say. He got up and he said, you have no permission to eat unless you have personal, specific doctor's orders. And he wrote a sefer, which was published in 1869, and here's what he had to say. And I'll read you the English. He says, it is incumbent upon us to publicize this great matter to generations forever. If something can be established with three occurrences, right, we say when something happens three times, it's a chazaka, it's established. And he says that thousands and tens of thousands of men and women, thank God, all fasted on the Yom Kippur fast in 1838, 1848, and 1866 in our entire country then, and nothing, God forbid, happened then to them, and this was known in almost the entire world. We have a contemporary written source saying explicitly, no, everybody did fast. So that tells us first a couple of things. First of all, we know when the strongest cholera plagues were. He just listed the years, 1838, 1848, and 1866. Number two, it's a conflicting account of what we've been told, unless, of course, history was only a tiny bit changed by the fact that Rabbi Salanter stood up there and he was opposed by this great Rabbi Bitzalel, who was a judge in the community and who people clearly respected more than Rabbi Salanter, if we are to believe what he says here. So this is a very important source in the discussion, but also does provide us with halachic support to say that such an opinion of having everybody eat is not unwarranted. We do have many poskim who say that. We also have some who say that that is not the case. Now, I'm not going to read the next source inside. It's a summary from an article that I read on the topic from Ira Taub, the rabbi who ate on Yom Kippur, Israel Salanter and the cholera epidemic of 1848. In the Albert Einstein College of Medicine Synagogue Compendium of Torah and Medicine. That is one of the longest titles I've ever read in my life. Nevertheless, he talks about, you know, the fact that this doesn't seem to be very well supported in historical sources, that most published accounts are really from second and third-hand sources, if at that, and all of the contemporary accounts that we have actually contradict this story. We'll see one in just a moment. And he quotes, you know, a number of different interpretations. Some scholars understand that there was an elaborate prank planned by Vilna's Maskilim where they actually went around from synagogue to synagogue posting this up in his name in an effort to embarrass him on Erev Yom Kippur. And there are all sorts of different versions of this. He also notes that this story would have been changed both, well, actually, he notes that it's quite possible that this story might have been changed by people who opposed Rabbi Salanter. Rabbi Salanter, being the head of the Musar movement, was not necessarily universally loved by everybody, certainly not by the Maskilim of the time, as we mentioned. And people think that it's possible that the story may have been changed over time by people looking to put him in a bad light. I would add to that and say that you can have the reverse effect as well, right? Because imagine that someone believed that this was Rabbi Salanter's psak. There's a big difference between saying it and getting up there yourself and eating on Yom Kippur. That's a really impressive stand. So it's quite possible also that history has been moved in the other direction to say, of course he did this. Why? Because he did what he believed in. And it may be that some people tried to discredit him by doing this, and it may be that some people tried to credit him by doing this. However, I wanted to end off reading from something that is as close to contemporary as we have, from what's considered a very good source by historians in terms of the lives of these rabbis at that point in time. That is from somebody by the name of Jacob Mark, who was born in 1860, but spoke to people about these stories when he was still back in Europe. And he originally wrote in Yiddish. It was translated, and I have a citation here from that. Vilna provided Rabbi Israel with numerous opportunities to do good deeds, and indeed many stories were told of his charity and kindness in helping the needy and oppressed. I want to dwell particularly on one story which has frequently been told about him. During a cholera epidemic to discourage people from fasting on Yom Kippur, he was supposed to have pronounced a benediction on wine in the great synagogue of Vilna, despite the objection of the authoritative rabbis in matters affecting Jewish law. That's the way he was told the story. The story entered our literature in Steinschneider's City of Vilna and Frischmann's The Three Who Ate, which we saw earlier, as a true incident, but it is only a myth. I once talked with Rabbi Simeon Streshun of Vilna, who had been in the synagogue on that occasion. As far as I know, no one else claims to have actually been there in all of the accounts that I saw. And Rabbi Streshun himself was very well known. He was a rabbi and certainly reliable. And this is what happened, he says, the day before Yom Kippur, with the concurrence of the authoritative rabbis, Rabbi Israel had announcements posted that people were supposed to... that. In the synagogues, that because of the epidemic, the liturgical poems could be omitted, the prayers were to be shortened as much as possible, and people were to stay in the fresh air as long as possible. Tiny portions of sponge cake, which as we said were lesser than the amount that's a biblical prohibition of eating on Yom Kippur, again when someone is ill, were to be on hand in an antechamber of the synagogue to be used if necessary. After the morning services, Rabbi Israel mounted the pulpit and announced that anyone feeling weak could partake of food in the antechamber without asking a doctor's opinion. Then the head of the authoritative rabbinical body followed Rabbi Israel to the pulpit, protesting the announcement, but Rabbi Israel himself did not, in fact, taste any food. And the truth is, this is, again, considered a very good source. Even the book that we cited earlier often will use this as a good source. He rejects it in this circumstance for something, for a reason which is honestly not clear to me. I don't want to get into too many details, but we see that the story did not take place, but nevertheless, we can see that Rabbi Salanter's caring soul was present and that he was willing to act on it in such a great capacity from another true story about him in Yom Kippur, which emphasizes many similar points. That's the story which appears in the text following this. I'm going to summarize outside, but the famous story as retold is that this happened in Salant, and this is confirmed by various sources, which is that he was on his way to shul one Yom Kippur night, and as he's walking, he hears, so he looks around and he sees there's a door open to a house and there's a baby lying there in a crib, unable to reach his or her bottle. He goes in and he takes the bottle to give it to the baby. This poor baby is stuck here in a dark house alone. And at that point, the younger girl who was left alone in the house, a six-year-old girl, wakes up and realizes, oh, I was supposed to give the baby a bottle, but she's very afraid because it's dark outside. And her mother has gone to shul, leaving her to tend to the baby, which was probably not something that weird back 150 years ago. And therefore, in that case, he actually stays with the six-year-old and the baby until the mother returns to shul, and only at that point does he go to shul, where everybody says, where were you? You missed Kol Nidre! And he says, what a great opportunity. Not only did I have a chance to do a chesed of this magnitude, but we know, of course, that life is sacred, and clearly he's sensitive to these same issues and would stand behind his decisions. Whether or not this story took place, we know that this other story took place. And I think it's a great lesson from Rabbi Salanter about how we should stand by what we believe in on Yom Kippur and otherwise, and may we never know of such plagues again. Thank you.